welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. This podcast aims to bring you expert insights from a multidisciplinary team on recognizing the symptoms of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, key considerations for the diagnosis and pre-symptomatic screening for the condition, and emerging novel therapies for its medical management. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Sarepta Therapeutics. In this podcast, a paediatrician, a geneticist, and a neurologist discuss established treatments and the role of the multidisciplinary team in the management of Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
Hello. My name is Dr. Laurel Kaufman, and I'm a paediatrician at Weiss Booth Pediatrics in Chicago, Illinois. Today, I am joined by Dr. Nancy Kuntz, a professor of pediatrics and neurology at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. Welcome, Dr. Kuntz.
Hi.
And by Dr. Nadia Merchant, a geneticist and endocrinologist at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Dr. Merchant.
Thank you.
So in this section, we will be discussing what are the established methods for medical management of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and why is the multidisciplinary team important? Now, as a general pediatrician, once a patient does have an established diagnosis of Duchenne's, I typically am a referral source, sending patients out to specialists as far as further treatment. Dr. Merchant, we'll start with you. What is the aim of physiotherapy, and how should clinicians objectively monitor the patient's progression during this physiotherapy?
So I think from a physiotherapy, you want to make sure that the patient's staying active and mobile as much as possible from a bone health perspective overall, and also following and tracking their activity level, which I think neurology does very well doing, especially once we have the diagnosis of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, what we're talking about here. But in a multidisciplinary clinic, I think that's really important that we're tracking different things along the way. So we're making sure we give them the optimal care.
That makes sense. Yeah, and this one to Dr. Kuntz, glucocorticoids are the current standard of care for patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Now, I've had experience working with steroids for patients for different conditions, and definitely a lot of side effects can come along with those medications. How do you approach treating your patients with steroids, and what outcomes would you expect from this treatment regimen?
Well, the trials have shown that adding in any form of glucocorticoids on a regular basis to a boy with a Duchenne muscular dystrophy lengthens their time of ambulation and their strength overall and their survival. And it's important to understand a little bit about why that is. The dystrophin is a protein that helps anchor the contractile part of the muscle to the basement membrane in the muscle overall. So without that anchoring, there's more torque. And it turns out that the muscle cell membrane becomes leaky. And that leak actually creates a secondary inflammation, as the CK and calcium and other things that should stay intracellularly are leaked out. And it's been shown in animal models that that secondary inflammation is a big cause of muscle breakdown, not just the absence of the dystrophin protein. So using those glucocorticoids can really help preserve muscle. And that's one of the most important things in this setting. There are a bunch of different ways of doing it. People have used in the United States, primarily prednisone over the years. Europe began using a fluorinated corticosteroid called the Flazacort. And now that has become available in the United States. The tradition or protocol for many years was to use it daily. But as you've pointed out so clearly, daily steroids has a very long list of potential side effects. So some people have trialed pulse steroids, what they call the weekend dosing, meaning a large dose divided into two consecutive days rather than all 7 days per week. And that has, some people's perspective, done a very good job with equal efficacy and less in the way of side effects. But again, it's newer, and so it's less traditional and hasn't been used as widespread. So it's always this issue of recognizing that the corticoids, glucocorticoids, do really help settle down the inflammation in the muscle, preserve muscle tissue, improve motor outcomes, but there is the payback from the side effects.
Sure, of course. And kind of getting into each component where Duchenne's can affect the body, cardiomyopathy generally develops around the age of 10. And by the age of 18, all patients with Duchenne's will present with cardiomyopathy. Dr. Merchant, what steps do you typically take to manage cardiomyopathy? And at what age do you typically start this management?
So from a cardiomyopathy perspective, there's when you're in a multidisciplinary clinic, you're being followed very closely and being evaluated every 6 months to a year to make sure that there isn't any progression. And starting the medication earlier does help improve, because even for the less severe form of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is Becker's, they also have cardiac manifestations, mm-hmm. and that sometimes is more severe than compared to their like mobility that we were worried about. And so it's really important that we have them following with the cardiologist and the pulmonologist to make sure that we're doing the appropriate management from that perspective. And then I think the one thing we always forget is really the orthopedic management and the endocrine from a side effects profile. I feel like if we think about all the side effects of steroids, we can manage those appropriately if we're looking for them and we are discussing them with the families. So having that discussion early on, but all of these manifestations are really important. So I also hope that the family is an advocate for their child, saying, did we address this? Did we look into this? Or I have questions regarding my son's been having back pain, or do we have, like, is there anything we need to do for their bone health and maybe give treatment for that? So from that perspective, I think it's important when we're talking about that they're being followed for every single thing. And I think having all the disciplines makes a huge difference.
And to that point, with the bone health, that's an important part of their overall management. Aside from just the medical management, what's the role of nutrition in promoting their bone health?
Yeah. So I start that with really early on, since I'm an endocrinologist. And one of the reasons I went into that was because I want to make sure I can maximize their bone health and delay their risk of fractures. And so making sure they're having a good amount of calcium in their diet, making sure they have enough vitamin D in their diet. Sometimes we have to give them a little bit more of vitamin D supplementation because the steroids can affect that a little bit. And then their activity, trying to see what we can do to make sure that they're less at risk for fractures. But if they do develop fractures, we do have bisphosphonates. There have been lots of studies been done. It's been used for many years for patients. It's been done a lot more in the adult population, but it's really a standard of care for patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. So they're in, and it does improve their quality of life. And that's one of the things I do, let the families decide when and if we want to start it. And sometimes we start it, there's some studies showing maybe we can even start earlier than we used to before.
That's great. And then just from a different modality of regarding their lung function, Dr. Kuntz, how do you monitor respiratory function in patients? And what techniques do you recommend to promote their respiratory function?
we include guidance for respiratory care from a very early age before the boys are really having any major symptoms or problems. The first thing we try to do is include guidance and advice about cough assist. There's a very simple device. It's just a pressure device. Some people call it insufflator, exufflator, but it kind of puts in a big pressure and brings it back to help with mucus release from the walls of the bronchioles. And many times introducing that so it's not a foreign procedure to young boys with Duchenne helps them through intercurrent respiratory illnesses so that they don't either get pneumonia or need to be hospitalized. So cough assist is one of the things that we do. And then after that, we just monitor them with their symptoms and with their peak forces kind of pulmonary functions. And if they start showing a decline in their peak force pulmonary function when they come in for clinic evaluation, or if they begin complaining of tiredness in the morning or a headache when they wake up, suggesting that they may be retaining a little bit of CO2, due to some hypoventilation overnight, then we get an overnight sleep study. And the overnight sleep study helps us. Sometimes we're now able to get a transcutaneous PCO2 monitoring even in clinic to help a little bit with that. But usually if there's a problem, we see it first at night because everyone has a little bit less deep breathing during sleep. So that nocturnal hypoventilation will show up with morning headaches and grogginess. And then mask ventilation and positive pressure in a bipressure or BiPAP level is something that has made a really big difference in terms of energy and decreasing heart strain. And again, has been a big move forward in terms of health outcomes for boys with Duchenne.
Okay, so the proactive symptom-based multidisciplinary team management and access to non-invasive ventilation have enabled patients improved survival into adulthood. What does the structure of this multidisciplinary care team for the optimal management of patients with DMD look like? Dr. Merchant.
I think one of the important things is having a great primary care doctor to make sure that they're following up with that, right? And so we need to make sure they're vaccinated and making sure they're getting everything else is being done. So a really good PCP. And then also, I think having emergency care. They need to have a letter maybe that says that they have adrenal insufficiency if they show up to the ER, if they have a fracture, to make sure that they mobilize earlier so they don't have those complications. And then there's the multidisciplinary clinic that we think of. And in every location, it's a little bit hospital and maybe slightly different, which disciplines are there at that clinic. So obviously the neurologist, sometimes there's a genetic counselor, so to kind of help with the family with the diagnosis. And then GI, cardiology, endocrine, orthopedics, pulmonology, all of these are different components that are really important in a multidisciplinary clinic. It would be ideal if we could have everybody there at the same clinic every time, but it obviously we all know it doesn't always happen. But I think the goal is that even if the child is not being managed by an endocrinologist, for example, they are being seen by them maybe or having some communication to make sure that is being checked off. So I think that having all these does make a huge difference because we not only the reason kids are living longer now, also care has improved, but we've been able to coordinate care and everybody's wearing their hat to make sure that every component of their child's life has been taken care of. And so I think the multidisciplinary team needs to communicate. That's the most important thing. And I think that it could be a virtual model. It could be in person, which is obviously the best. But, you know, we've all learned through COVID that sometimes things are a little bit different.
Sure. No, this is really great. It's important as a general pediatrician just to have all these different modalities in mind as far as managing these patients. But thank you for both Dr. Kuntz and Dr. Merchant for this interesting discussion. And thank you to the audience for listening.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget there are three other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.